From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 336, Next Generation Storage, with guest Stephen Foskett. Recorded Monday, September 9th, 2013. Run As Radio is produced each week by PWOP Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. Today, my guest is Stephen Foskett, who is an active participant in the world of enterprise information technology, currently focusing on enterprise storage and cloud computing. He's responsible for Gestalt IT, a community of independent IT thought leaders, and organizes the popular Tech Field Day events. A longtime voice in the storage industry, Stephen has offered numerous articles for industry publication and is a popular presenter at industry events. His contributions to the enterprise IT community have earned him recognition both as a Microsoft MVP and a VMware vExpert, and he can be found online at gestaltit.com, fosketts.net, and on Twitter at sfoskett. Welcome, sir.
Welcome. Hey, thank you. Thank you very much.
And I'm looking at your great simulated photo, the Polaroid. That is such...
Oh, yeah.
You got to be a certain age to just get a grin when you see a photo like that.
Oh, sure. I mean, you know, even today, who doesn't love Polaroids? There's something just visceral about having a picture come out of the camera and being able to hold it up and look at it. And I also like the idea of waiting. I like that, you know, there's that anticipation.
You have to see it come in, right?
And it's very social, too. Think about that. I mean, you take a picture of the Polaroid. What do? Do you, like, hide it? No. You, like, everybody gathers around. Ooh, what does it look like? And we don't see that anymore.
Let me see. Yeah. Well, the funny part is, of course, we have digital photographs, so it's easy to show them to you, but you see them on a little screen. It's not the same. I worked with a group of pro photographers that had the big SLRs, the 5D and so forth, and they had Wi-Fi chips tied into PCs to dynamically dump the photos. They had no storage capacity limits. And so we would actually be watching the photos on a tablet as they came out. But it's still not the same.
No, it doesn't have that social thing to it.
Yeah.
And like I said too, it doesn't have the waiting. But if you like that photo, actually, if you look at my Google Plus header, the story of that photo is told is a little storyboard comic as my Google Plus page.
Awesome.
I'll leave that as an exercise to the listener.
Yeah, go take a boo. Absolutely. So what have you been working on these days, Stephen?
I've been really, really busy with the Tech Field Day series. We now do networking field day, for like, you know, wireheads. We do Wi-Fi field day, wireless field day for the Wi-Fi people, and storage field day. I think the last time I talked to you, you know, we had just kind of started the idea of doing a storage field day. I was hesitant to do that at first because, you know, as a storage guy, I didn't want to be pigeonholed as the storage guy, but once, you know, networking and wireless became strong enough, I figured, you know, why not? Let's do storage. And it's been really fantastic. You know, we've got, you know, the, well, I've had, you know, companies debut at the event, you know, Infinio, Exablox, you know, Fusion.io came, announced their acquisition of NextGen at Storage Field Day last time.
Awesome.
You know, it's pretty neat to see something that you started end up being interesting to people.
Well, and I also, you know, recognize that I think you plugged into this is that the IT audience is very topic focused. That they want it's good to run a storage event because sometimes we need to talk about storage.
Absolutely.
And I don't really want to worry about anything else. I don't want a generalized conversation. I really want to drill into storage problems.
Yeah, and the storage, let me tell you, I mean, I had breakfast this morning with Greg Farrow from Packet Pushers and Yvonne Papelniak from IPSpace.net, both of them Wired guys.
Mm-hmm.
And we were commenting how the different communities are very different. You know, the networking is a very professional field.
Yes.
And these guys have strong beliefs, but they're, you know, seasoned professionals. Storage is different. Storage is really a nerdy kind of a nuts and bolts field, and it's actually a lot of fun to hang out with storage nerds and geek out about IOPS and shingled rights. And, you know, I mean, it's people think storage isn't fun, but it is.
At velocity, you know, when you get to a certain scale, storage is a huge deal. And the world of the SAN is in a funny state. I'm starting to feel like Microsoft has become anti-SAN.
Absolutely, they are. I totally agree with that statement. You know, and it's not that Microsoft, it's not that Microsoft dislikes SANs or SAN companies. You know, Microsoft doesn't have it in for EMC,
right.
You know, or HDF. But I think that the Microsoft people, and so just, you know, disclaimer, I'm a Microsoft MVP.
Right.
I meet with the Microsoft product managers for storage all the time. And so I talk to these people monthly, if not more often. So that gives me some insight, and I don't want to betray, you know, anything, any secrets or anything, but I'll tell you, they seem very sincere in focusing on, making things quicker, cheaper, easier for the average Windows Server admin.
Sure.
And so I think that leads to this whole anti-SAN thing. So it's not a vendetta. It's not like Microsoft hates Fibre Channel. It's that Microsoft looks around and they see Exchange admins and SQL admins needing storage and not wanting to deal with Fibre Channel. And so they say, well, what can we do? What can we do differently? And they've done a ton.
Yeah, it seems like a lot has changed. Well, you know, I'm in the process of doing an Exchange 2013 migration and just looking back and seeing this seems more and more, almost reminds me of the old days with networking. You know, when you used to buy, like I would buy Novell to add to my system as the networking solution. And now I'm looking at Exchange and thinking, I just need a bunch of disks and Exchange is going to take care of this. I don't need to look at these specialized storage solutions anymore.
Yeah, and I think that's Microsoft's real goal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's self-serving in a way because every dollar you don't spend with EMC is a dollar that you could spend with Redmond.
Right.
But at the same time, I don't think that's their goal, really. Their goal is to make things truly plug and play. And if that happens to make storage irrelevant for, you know, as a thing, that's okay with them.
Yeah.
And of course, that being said, there's a lot of storage stuff going on, and it's not like storage is ever going to be irrelevant. But but you know, hopefully they can contribute to eradicating Fibre Channel.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody's terribly unhappy to make Fibre Channel go away because a lot of that is unnecessary. But I've had a couple conversations with folks looking at especially Exchange, saying I've gone to my storage administrators and said, "Hey, we're going to take Exchange off the SAN. You can have those spindles back," and their jaws drop because, you know, anybody who works in storage knows people only ask for more. They never ask for less.
Yeah. Well, traditionally, Exchange has been one of the big applications that demanded high performance shared storage. But that all changed with the new, basically what you're doing right now. Microsoft made Exchange not need high end shared storage.
Right.
And that was pretty, you know, controversial. I think you and I met at a meeting when they were announcing this stuff, and I was just like, you guys are crazy, you know?
Yeah, are you serious?
Yeah. Because, heck, you know, that's always been something Exchange needed, but by tuning the application, making the application behave differently, they made it not have the same kind of a profile, a workload profile that requires high-end shared storage. And a lot of people are doing exactly what you're doing, which is moving to a DAS approach for Exchange.
Yep. And distribute across a couple of machines with an array of drives, enough redundancy, you could tolerate some failure, and let the app take care of business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, Exchange is one of those things that's such an integrated vertical app. You know, it does its thing and it's going to be its own thing in the data center. I mean, you could think of it kind of analogous to like the voicemail system or something like that, you know. It's a system. It's a complete integrated system.
For sure. Yeah. It's really interesting thinking. I'm also liking more of this hybridization of SSDs and stuff like Fusion IO, as well as spinning media storage. Are you seeing this going on as well?
Oh, well, that is one of the main topics in enterprise storage right now across the board. You know,
right.
whether you look at, you know, a company like, for example, Nimble Storage, who is famous for hybrid / disk kind of approach. Or if you look at, you know, what Dell is doing with the Compellent architecture, or what EMC is doing with the VNX, or you come down the line. I mean, if you think about even on the desktop, you know, in my iMac, I have a Fusion Drive, mm-hmm. which is a hybrid storage solution with a flash SSD and a spinning disk. And Microsoft now added that in Server 2012 R2. They have hybrid storage built into there as well. So, in fact, Microsoft looks a lot like Apple's Fusion Drive.
Yeah, funny enough.
But yeah, that's absolutely happening all over the place, and it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, there's stuff you need to be very, very fast. There's stuff you need to have large capacity, and you've got to, you know, sort them out. I just like this idea that the system is starting to figure out what needs to be where. You don't have to think about it.
Yeah, and that's the trick to it. You know, is how does the system know? And the way to do that is to have it be integrated, to have metrics built in, and to have the system have some kind of communication channel back to the storage array, so the storage array can make intelligent choices.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that has been really largely missing from the operating systems. I mean, you know, you look at, you know, Fusion Drive, it has the most simple possible way of making decisions, which is what was recently written.
Right.
That's it. You know, you look at something more advanced, for example, the Nimble device, you know, it's got, you know, algorithms, you know, Compellent, they've got algorithms that decide where to put things. You look at something that's truly advanced, you know, kind of the next generation, though, and it's really doing something different. You know, you've got a sort of a cloud application that's using tiered storage in a very intelligent, integrated way. But in order to do that, basically what they've had to do is cast off everything that was traditional in storage. I mean, they don't even use, they don't treat it like a disk. They treat it like an object store and things like that.
So, right. Yeah, I feel like we're headed towards this virtualization of storage, too, that it's just...
Yeah.
The how stuff is physically stored and how you get at it is completely different from each other. You don't need to know about drives anymore. You don't need to know what the actual size of anything is anymore, the speed of anything is anymore. The app simply puts its data out there and the storage subsystem knows where to put it.
Yeah, and that's the goal. And that should be the goal. You know, if you were to design storage, you'd have to be crazy to say, you know what I want is I want a fake disk drive that pretends to be a disk drive and doesn't have any intelligence. I mean, that would be the last thing you'd ask for. No, what you'd ask for is I want a storage thing that I can throw my data at and say, here's some data. This is important. Make it go fast.
Yes.
And then the thing will do it. And I don't want to know about disk drives and I don't want to know about flash drives. I just want the thing to do the thing that it does.
Right.
And that's cutting edge, and that's where the industry is headed.
That's the ultimate goal, is it's just abstract and go as quickly as possible. So we've all agreed that we've had enough of Fibre Channel. So what is the storage? How do you feel about iSCSI these days?
Well, you know, iSCSI is a funny story. I was really bullish on iSCSI. In fact, you know, I think that's the reason that Microsoft originally took notice of what I was doing, was because I was out there saying, hey, check this out, you know? The Microsoft iSCSI initiator is awesome. You know, the Linux iSCSI initiator is awesome.
Right.
You know, you can build your own storage array and not have Fibre Channel. And honestly, I'm going to say something weird. I hope that iSCSI kind of becomes irrelevant, just like I hope that Fibre Channel becomes irrelevant. You know, it's like whatever, you know, whatever gets you to your storage. One thing that iSCSI doesn't have going for it is it doesn't have any of the stuff that we've been talking about. It doesn't have any inherent way of scaling out.
Right.
It doesn't have any way built in of tiering storage.
Well, it seemed to me that all iSCSI brought to the table was a common protocol that was shareable.
Yeah.
You know, the same way,
exactly.
and but it wasn't all that better than plain old SCSI. I mean, I actually did drive clustering with, you know, LTV SCSI, where you literally had machines on either end of the same cable. And,
yep,
you know,
absolutely.
Stuff was hard. Like, it wasn't pretty. And iSCSI seemed like a friendlier way to do that, that now I could have a bunch of machines and a bunch of storage devices. Everybody could see everybody else. But it never seemed to measure up.
Yeah. Well, you know, I would maybe disagree a little bit. I think iSCSI is and remains an important, you know, component of the industry. I mean, essentially, iSCSI is fine. It's just fine. Oh, you need to connect to some storage? iSCSI, no sweat. It works.
Right.
You know, it doesn't take Fibre Channel knowledge, and you just Obviously, iSCSI has its own esoteric knowledge, but it works fine.
But yeah, I don't feel like you sacrificed quite as many chickens with iSCSI as you needed to with Fibre Channel.
Oh, certainly not. Yeah, I've worked with Fibre Channel now. I was thinking about it the other day. My first Fibre Channel array was 15 years ago, mm-hmm. something like that, 1998. And that was when Fibre Channel just first came out. I remember walking into that class and then walking out again and thinking, what were they thinking? What is all this stuff? I mean, you got your E ports and G ports and your N ports and your, and, you know, all this, LUN masking and now, no, we don't want that. You know, that's one thing that iSCSI still has going for it. I mean, yeah, it's got some funny concepts, but boy, it's way less weird than Fibre Channel.
Sure.
It's also way less quick than Fibre Channel and way less flexible and way less extensible, but whatever.
Yeah. It is interesting limitations. So, I mean, that sort of walks us towards a Windows storage server, doesn't it? That this sort of makes that all that kind of transparent. You just don't care anymore.
Let's back up. VMware made hay with iSCSI.
Right.
But then VMware realized the limitations of the protocol. I mean, iSCSI is just a fake disk over Ethernet. That's all it is.
Right.
And they realized, a lot of the people at VMware realized, that they needed more intelligence and more advanced communication. And so VMware adopted NFS instead. And NFS is a file-based protocol. There's more information included in your IOs, in terms of, because you've got this extra layer in there. Instead of addressing it just as a bunch of blocks, you're addressing it as a file system with files. And NFS really took off like a rocket in VMware. In fact, if you're wondering what happened to iSCSI, I think NFS VMware is what happened to iSCSI.
Right.
Frankly, everybody got excited about all the cool things you could do with NFS. And, Microsoft was really slow to catch on to that.
Mm-hmm.
Microsoft was only Fibre Channel or iSCSI or DAS for Hyper-V until Server 2012 and Hyper-V 3. But now that Hyper-V 3 is here and has been here for a year, Microsoft is strongly pushing people to their own file-based protocol, SMB. And actually, let me make a side note here to all the people out there who call it SIFS. I've got a blog post on that. Please don't. Please stop saying that. It's called SMB. It's called SMB 3.
What's the difference between SIFS and SMB? I mean, SMB is the older idea, right?
SMB has been what it's always been called. SIFS
right.
was version 1. It was the protocol version 1.
Right.
And SIFS sucked, basically. It's all the things that everybody thinks is wrong with FileServer. I mean, it was really chatty, and it didn't work over WAN, and, it had all these weird dialects because everybody did it slightly different. SIFS was terrible. And then they came out with SMB version 2. And now they've got SMB version 3.
Right.
And they fixed all those things. All the things you hate about SIFS are gone. And SMB version 3 has amazingly cool stuff. It's got, link aggregation and scale out. And, it works over InfiniBand. I mean, it's so cool. And yet, people still think, oh, SIFS, I use that on my Windows 95 machine and it sucks. So that's why I say, please don't call it SIFS.
Yeah, well, and also just like shake off your baggage, man. That was 17 years ago, 18 years ago. Like, come on, stuff's moved.
Yeah, well, exactly. And that's actually the point that I'm trying to make here is that if you're running an operating system, a Microsoft operating system that is 10 years old or newer, connecting to a Microsoft server that is 10 years old or newer, mm-hmm. you haven't been using SIFS, whether you think you are or not.
Right.
You've been using SMB version 2. And if you have Server 2012, if you have, the newest, Windows 8, you are using SMB 3, whether you know it or not.
Right.
And SMB 3 is honestly one of the most advanced storage protocols in the universe. And I know that the Martians are going to disagree, but I really think that it's fantastically advanced.
But SMB 3 is what sort of facilitated Hyper-V's breakout with all the ability to move VMs around. Just suddenly shipping gigs of data around over wires isn't that big a deal anymore.
Yeah. Well, some of the cool stuff in SMB 3, I mean, you want to see something awesome, okay, and your listeners want to try something awesome,
mm-hmm.
so get yourself a Server 2012 file server and a Hyper-V 3 on 2012 client, okay? connect a 1 gig link
mm-hmm.
and you're running at 1 gigabit. Connect another 1 gig link between the two and transparently, without you doing anything, without you even configuring anything, you're running at 2 gigabit.
Right.
And it's going to load balance across those. Throw in a 10 gig link and suddenly you're running at 10 gigs, not 12 gigs because it'll prefer the faster one. But, and then it gets cooler. You can go to 54 gigabits. SMB3, server 2012 interconnects are actually faster than fiber channel, and faster than fiber channel will be 5 years from now.
Right.
That's cool stuff.
Well, and it also, it's a commoditization, right? I mean, I used to do multi-linking between hardware. I've even done InfiniBand, but you buy dedicated hardware and you do driver matching, and like you ever had to be very, very careful to make all that stuff mm-hmm. work. And now it's just sort of trivial. It happens by accident.
Yep. And in fact, I think that that's actually one of the reasons that people don't know about this stuff is because they may be using it already, but they don't know because it just sort of does its thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the coolest, honestly, one of the biggest innovations in SMB3 is the fact that it automatically negotiates everything for you.
Right.
You connect it up, the server talks to the client, and the client talks to the server, and they negotiate as fast as they can.
Yeah, it's like, how fast can you go? Well, how fast can you go? And they make a deal.
You support multi-link? Okay, then let's do that. You know? So, it's really cool. And with Hyper-V, one of the other cool things about SMB3 is that you've also got ODX, which allows another Microsoft protocol that hasn't been trumpeted much,
mm-hmm.
but ODX offloads work from the client to the server. So instead of, for example, instead of doing a live migration of a Hyper-V guest, if you're using Server 2012 and Hyper-V3, and you're, you've got ODX, it'll offload the copy, so instead of pulling all that data to the client and then sending it right back down the wire again,
right.
It'll just tell the storage array, hey, can you make a copy of that for me?
Yeah.
And it's brilliant. And that's supported not just in Hyper-V, but also in Server 2012 itself.
Wow.
So you may find that if you're talking to a Windows file server, suddenly everything's just faster because the file server is doing the work for you instead of pulling the data over the wire and sending it right back down again. But again, not a lot of people have heard of this because it's, my storage. What do I care about?
Storage is just not that interesting. Didn't you hear?
Yeah, exactly. So I could geek out about this stuff all day long.
You and me both, man. And it's funny where we're just sort of sliding stuff like SSDs in. Like certainly on the desktop, it's just silly not to have an SSD anymore. But are you using them for boot drives on servers now?
I think a lot of people are now, I'm seeing a lot more people in the virtualization space booting their server from a thumb drive and using, shared storage in the VMware side.
Right.
Predominantly NFS. They'll boot the ESX from a thumb drive and just have everything run off of NFS.
Right.
And, it's doing whatever it's doing. And, on the Windows side, I don't see that as much, but I do see people booting off of SD cards, internal SDs, certainly, some USB drive people. But for servers and for desktops, man, an SSD is addictive. Once you've tasted that, you can't ever.
No, it's a one way trip. I'm with you. I don't think people have focused enough on the potential of USB 3 and USB 3 keys. Because that's crazy. When those two things work together correctly, that's crazy fast.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, and that's another thing. It's like this whole SIFS SMB thing. People look at thumb drives and they say, oh, those are terrible. They're so slow.
Right.
Well, I just bought a couple of SanDisk Extreme thumb drives. It looks like just any old thumb drive that you get at Staples or whatever. But the thing will go 200 megabytes per second, read and write. So seriously, and because inside that little thing, instead of being, the reason thumb drives stink is because it's like one chip and the world's worst controller.
Right.
Because with USB 2, it didn't have to be fast.
Yeah.
But with USB 3, what they did is they actually shoved an SSD in there. So it's got an SSD controller and it's got multi-channel internally. It's 10 times faster than what you're used to.
Yeah. Now, it's fast enough that when I've demonstrated this, people just don't believe I actually copied something.
Mm-hmm.
Like, absolutely. I drop it on the thumb drive, it goes bunk, and they're like, well, what was that? That was a movie.
Yeah. Yep.
Wait a second.
Well, I do a lot of video production for Tech Field Day, and my video crew and I, we both have Macs with USB 3 and these USB 3 thumb drives. and we're moving around. At the end of each session, I have to copy 6 gigs, 10 gigs of data.
Right.
Of movie data, because we just recorded, you know, HD video of 2 hours. And it used to be that he would give me the session at the end of the next session, and then I would give him the drive back at the end of the session after that.
Right.
Because that's how long it took to copy. Now, in the time that it takes him to disassemble the cameras and for me to put my laptop in my bag, he's given me the thumb drive already.
Yeah.
And sometimes I actually give it back to him before I even walk out the door.
Before he's finished packing up.
Yeah, it's just insane.
Some of these copies I've done now, doing the same sort of thing with audio files and stuff, it takes longer for Windows to recognize the drive and pull up the folder than it did to actually copy it.
Yeah, so I can't say enough about these things. I mean, and like you say, if you're talking about like boot drives or, you know, Windows to go or that kind of thing, read the reviews, make sure the drive is any good, because there's a huge spectrum. Some of these drives, I mean, some of the USB thumb drives still are only like 20, 30 megabytes per second.
Yeah.
Others are 90 megabytes per second, right? But I'm telling you, there's a bunch of them, and it's not just SanDisk, but the SanDisk Extreme is the one that I have. I've used the Patriot. There's a supersonic one.
Yep.
200 megabytes per second. That's a different class.
Well, and priced accordingly, too. These are not $5 thumb drives.
No. I spent $75 on mine.
Yeah. But you're right. But the good vendors, the Corsairs and the SanDisk and all those guys, make a high-end drive. And I think it's good enough that you start thinking about how I would configure machines differently. Like, why am I sticking drives in these machines at all when I could be running them from these thumb drives where I can remove them when I need to?
Yeah, absolutely. And, and actually another point that I'd like to make too, I mentioned SD cards. No SD card can touch this kind of performance.
No.
So although some people, you know, some of the machines have an internal SD reader, and there's SDHC and SDXC, and those are supposed to be faster. They're not.
Yeah.
You're not going to get this kind of performance out of an SD card. What I'd like to see, I'd love to see motherboard vendors put a USB 3 socket internally,
mm-hmm.
so that you could just buy one of these suckers, stick it in there, and boot off of that, and you'd be golden. I think maybe some of them have that. Do they?
I haven't seen a motherboard like that, and I've been looking for exactly that thing. Is it? That's precisely how I want to set my machine up. I don't want to try up a drive bay. I don't think caddies are necessary anymore unless you're dealing with spinning media. Like, SSDs and caddies to me seem silly. And I don't want to tie up PCIe slots. So why wouldn't I just want a couple of those little blue USB plugs right on the motherboard, drop them in and go?
Yeah, and you know, I feel one of the reasons I don't like this whole, you know, boot from the thumb drive thing is I worry about it. It's so exposed, like sticking out the front, sticking out the back. You know, you're going to whack into it. You're going to break it off or something. You know,
I don't want anything sticking out of the machine.
Yeah, just put it on the inside of the machine. Because, I mean, yeah, we said these things are expensive. You know, so I got 64 gigs, $75, 200 megabytes per second. That's a dream as a boot drive in a server.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's exactly what you need. And in the context of a 64 gig SSD, it's not expensive. In the context of a USB key, yeah, it's pretty expensive.
Yeah. So, yeah, and I mean, as an SSD, it's really not. Now, of course, the other thing you have to worry about is longevity and, firmware issues and stuff like that. So I guess there could be cases where this might not be as good as we're making it sound.
Right.
But, you know, honestly, again, you buy a good quality piece, you keep your server backed up, you keep it clustered, you're probably in good shape.
Yeah. I think USB 3 is just one of those things we haven't paid enough attention to yet. And it speaks to me as an IT guy starting to think in the context of, like, I really want Windows to go to be great. Mm-hmm. And I've tried to make it great. Microsoft's really an obstacle to all of that. But I envision a time, why isn't there a USB 3 drive built into my phone? With, I say, 128 gigs of storage in it. That's got my boot environment on it. I can access it from my phone. So it's a copy of my local storage. Yes, I have a copy of everything in the cloud, but I also have it in my phone. So if I don't have a connection at the moment, like I'm in an elevator, I'm fine. But then the idea that I could just take that phone, plug it into a USB port, boot off of it, and have a full-size machine to work on, and it's still writing to the same set of data.
That'd be cool.
But it gets back to the real issue we've got, which is I don't care about the hardware. The hardware is everywhere. It's becoming ubiquitous. I care about my configuration and my data.
And of course, some people would say cloud, right?
Yes.
You know, Chromebook.
But connectivity isn't that reliable. The real world has irregular connectivity.
And there's a lot of things you just can't do, you know, on a Chromebook.
Yeah.
You know, there was a great article about recently about a guy who, I don't remember who it was, but he used Chromebook for a while and then, you know, switched back to a real laptop and was, you know, it was kind of eye-opening that, yeah, you can use a Chromebook and it will work, but switching back is like a breath of fresh air. And
right.
Honestly, for me, it's kind of like the difference between a lot. I have an iPad. I still carry a laptop because I just can't get everything done on the iPad.
Yeah. It's just a bit too constrained. Well, and I think we're all in this phase where we're carrying a bit more hardware, trying to figure out what's the thing that makes me the most comfortable.
Yeah.
But I think the next phase of this, and I keep looking at Windows to Go for that, is this idea of hardware is everywhere. Bring your configuration and your data with you.
Yeah. And that was exciting. You know, I mean, the first time I saw Windows to Go, I was really thrilled with the idea. You know, because of what you're saying, you know, I mean, wouldn't it be great? You know, you've got something on your keychain and you plug it into any of the machines that your company has. And maybe if you need to do heavy duty work, maybe you plug it into a bigger machine.
Yeah.
Maybe if you need to walk around, you plug it into a tablet.
Yeah. You're exactly right. It depends on what you're doing. The form factors can shift. The hardware itself is just getting so crazy cheap that we can leave it lying around. It's our context that's expensive.
Yeah.
And this, you know, the funny part is this all comes down to storage. How do you transport your reality with you wherever you go? And cloud is not enough.
It always comes down to storage. Come on. You know, storage is the most important thing in the world.
The rest of that stuff's irrelevant. We're talking about storage here. Important stuff.
It really does. And that's, you know, that's one of the issues. You know, one of the problems with the cloud is bandwidth. How do you get your storage? Because, storage has inertia. Storage has gravity. You know, my friend Dave McCrory has this whole idea of data gravity, which, by the way, I totally recommend everybody to Google. It's really, really cool stuff. But the idea is that storage, even though, of course, it's just bits and bytes and it's ephemeral, it has weight, it has mass, and it has gravity. And where your storage is dictates where your compute will be.
Right.
Because it has to.
Yes.
Because you need your storage, you know? And it's just phenomenal how this affects all these things that we do. You know, I mean, you know, what's wrong with the Chromebook? It's not Chrome's problem. It's bandwidth. It's storage. Yep. It's I/O. You know,
it doesn't matter how fast the machine is if the connection's crappy, and everything you do depends on the connection.
Yeah, and that's actually, you know, on the in the data center too. That's one of those things that I always tell people. You know, for years we've come to expect that, you know, well, the history of IT is moving bottlenecks.
Yep.
And it's always been, you know, what's your bottleneck? Is it the CPU? Is it the, you know, the front side bus? Is it the RAM? Is it the network card? Is it the expansion chassis? So on and so on and so on.
Yep.
Is it the network? Well, now it's the storage, period.
Yeah.
The storage is your bottleneck, because we've managed to optimize everything but the storage and storage I/O. And now is the time when storage I/O is being optimized thanks to SSD and flash generally, and specifically thanks to some other technologies like PCI Express based storage and so on. So we're, you know, maybe 2 years from now, you and I will be talking and we'll be, you know, lamenting how slow the CPU is.
Yep. That'd be fun. It's been a long time since the CPU's been a problem.
Yeah. Well, it's going to happen.
Yep.
You know, I mean, how many cores can you use? I guess it's the software's problem pretty soon.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I was looking at, like you look at the new Mac Pro. What's wrong with it? It's got 12 cores. That's what's wrong with it. You know, basically, you've reached a point where you just can't throw more gigahertz at it. You have to throw more cores at it.
Yes.
How do you use 12 cores?
You don't, really.
What software can do that? So, you know, that's the problem. And that's the same with your servers. You know, you look at these crazy, you know, multi-core servers and so on. You know, do you have software that can actually use that? You know, because you know, one of the other innovations, again, you know, in the Mac Pro and, you know, a lot of the modern laptops and so on is PCI Express flash storage. And that suddenly makes storage not your problem anymore. It's been your problem. Now it's not.
Yeah, it's just shockingly fast. So yeah, I feel like we keep running up against these ideas of sufficiency. It's like, that's fast enough, you don't have to think about it anymore. And we haven't thought about process speed for a long time. And now we're squeezing these other bottlenecks out with PCIe basic storage and so forth. I mean, funny how the network starting to feel fast enough, although, again, there's some pressure here and there.
Well, the network is you know, I think networking has done a fantastic job of speeding up. You know, we've got gigabit, we've got 10 gigabit.
Yeah.
You know, and 10 gigabit's a lot of bandwidth.
It's a ton. Yeah. We have nothing that'll transfer. You know, you're not bottlenecking on the network. You are bottlenecking on the storage sources on either end of that.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I was just, it's funny. I was just talking to Ivan again about this. He was asking me a question. He said, you know, let's say I needed 100 gigabits of storage I/O to stress test the network. How would I do that? And I was like, well, you wouldn't. you're out of luck there. But no, you know, that was being flippant. You can probably do that. But, you know, actually, funny enough, one of my answers was put a bunch of LTO tape drives and just have them stream data.
Yeah.
You know, you think tape drives are slow?
No.
Not when they're streaming.
Nope.
But the point being that, you know, the network is so fast that it becomes kind of a mental exercise to figure out how could I fill this pipe? Yeah.
But
storage is speeding up. I like to shock people, you know, talking about these PCI Express storage devices. You know, I tell people, number one, don't measure storage in gigabytes, measure it in IOPS.
Yeah.
You know, because gigabytes are irrelevant. Gigabytes are free. You're going to have a lot of gigabytes, more than you can probably use unless you're video editing or, you know, you're doing some kind of thing. But, you know, in server space, don't worry about gigabytes anymore.
Yeah.
Worry about IOPS. So yeah. An enterprise hard drive, you know, nice high-end hard drive is about 200 IOPS in terms of, you know, read-write IO operations per second.
Right.
200. Okay. And so we've come to expect, and, you know, for example, Exchange has been tuned to deal with around 200 IOPS. Well, guess what? You know, if you multiply that out, you know, a moderately sized data center, if you took all the applications in the data center, that's going to use maybe 20,000 IOPS, maybe 40,000 IOPS. Okay. Here's the kicker. The SSD in my MacBook and the SSD in that SanDisk thumb drive, 50,000 IOPS.
Right. Yeah. He's like, you just don't care anymore.
Yeah, so that's a mid-sized data center worth of IOPS.
Yeah, in a drive.
In a drive, and that's a cheap, low-end drive.
Yeah.
Oh, you wanted a high-end drive. Oh, you wanted a PCI Express card. You know.
Yeah, let me show you something fast.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, you like this? You know, you like this? You know, Focus. You know, RS. Let me show you something with some real power to it. You know, here's the. You know. Here's the newest Ferrari, you know, and these cards are incredible. A single Fusion IO card is all the IOPS in a very large enterprise data center.
Awesome.
On one PCI card.
Steven, it's always so fun to talk to you. You know, this is good stuff. And it's just interesting to remind ourselves of what fast actually means.
Yeah. So that's some sexy storage there.
Yeah, you bet. It's very cool and really interesting. I think we're done. That's a show. I appreciate your thinking around the changes in storage here.
I could talk about this stuff all day long, so I appreciate you giving me the chance to rattle on about it.
Great. And when are the next Tech Field Days?
So yeah, we have seven a year right now.
Mm-hmm.
So the next one is actually 2 days from now when we're recording this.
I'm doing
Networking Field Day.
So, yeah, we're recording this on the 9th of September. So, on September 11th, great, auspicious day.
Oh, yeah, exactly. As an East Coaster, I always remember that.
Yeah.
So we're recording, we're doing Tech Field Day on September 11th, 12th, and 13th. That's for networking. We've got Storage Field Day coming up in November. And then next year, we've got two networking, two wireless, two storage, and virtualization. And again, these things aren't, you know, it's not something that somebody can come to, but it's something that everybody can watch online.
Right.
You go to techfieldday.com during the event, and the video is live streamed right there. And we always have a lot of people participating online. We got people on Twitter, and they'll tweet questions, and somebody in the room. It's like a panel of we call them delegates, because they're supposed to represent the people that are watching.
Cool.
You know, they're techies like you and me.
Yeah.
And they'll be watching the Twitter stream, and they'll be relaying stuff into the room. And then we also put them up on recordings. So if you look on YouTube, you can see recordings of a lot of these, are pretty much all the sessions that we're recording now. I think that basically anybody who's interested in listening to me geek out about SSDs would be interested in listening to, people like Ivan Peplinyak and, talk about Ethernet or Keith Parsons talk about Wi-Fi or Howard Marks talk about storage. So those are up there.
That's awesome. Steven, thanks so much for coming on the show.
It's great to be here. And, I look forward to our conversation about how this whole many cores concept has gotten out of hand and you have to figure out how to use them.
Give them a little time.
Some time. All right.
All right. And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.